This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union. We've got 125,000 members and nearly 50,000 retirees. We are part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast on iTunes. Simply go to your smartphone and search for DC 37 State of the Union as an app. You can also reach us by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Check out our website, www.dc37.net. And if you have any comments about this or any other show that you hear for DC 37, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. Our first guest this evening is the president of the Board of Education, Department of Education Employees Local 372. His name is Sean D. Francois I. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Appreciate it. Thank you. How you doing?
I'm doing well, and I hope you are too.
Yes, doing well.
Post Labor Day, we're back to work.
Absolutely. Labor Day was good. Labor Day was a good start off. It was a good beginning for us to get back to, you know, in the grooves of things and get us started.
And you held an event. You were part of an event at the steps of City Hall on Tuesday, September 4th, calling for more crossing guards. As school was beginning, there you were right back at work calling for more crossing guards and talking about the new city-run speed camera program near schools. So let's talk a little bit about the issue of crossing guards first.
Well, the crossing guards, as we know, we've been trying to hire crossing guards ever since my administration started. In fact, before that as well. But it's not the fact that we're trying to hire crossing guards. We've been trying to have adequate crossing guards. Because as you know, we've had at least 3 to 4 hiring halls because it was claimed the fact that crossing guards was not filling out applications, which we knew to be untrue because the calls that we got in was not the case. So the union, Local 272, in conjunction with DC 37, as well as the NYPD, we came together and had 4 hiring halls to make the process easier.
At DC 37 headquarters.
At DC 37. Because we wanted to show that that's not true, that the applicants are coming in. And which was beholden to be true, we had over thousands and thousands of applicants that came in.
I remember those days.
The building lines was... lines out the door.
Absolutely.
To fill up applications up. So the problem is now is once the application is filled out, once they go through the process, they don't get no callbacks. They're not hearing from NYPD. They don't understand what's going on. I'm getting a lot of calls. I filled out applications for the application, but not hearing anything. So the problem that we're having is somehow, once it gets to one police plaza, it's at a halt. It stops somewhere in there somewhere. Somewhere in there, it's a halt on the process. So we need to know what's going on. We need to know where our crossing guards at. Where are they? Where are our crossing guards?
Okay, so let me just slow this down for a bit. So the initial issue in trying to get as many crossing guards as we could to protect our school kids was that people, the administration was saying, or the department was saying that they weren't getting applications, that people were not applying for the job.
Correct.
You and the union stepped up and said, let's hold these hiring halls. At those hiring halls were thousands of people. Those hiring halls were held last year, I believe. I remember.
Yeah, last year and also this year as well. We had one about a month ago as well because of the recruitment was seemed to be low, so we tried to do it again.
Now so, I remember pictures in the DC 37 newspaper of folks in uniform interviewing the folks who were applying. So clearly there were lots of folks who were showing up. And now the problem is months later, the folks who have applied and who obviously were deemed worthy of going to the next step haven't been contacted.
Not at all. And that's the shameful part. That's the disrespectful part. They want you know, the mayor of New York City, which is, I'm not blaming him. I'm not blaming the governor of New York as well, because they're out there trying to help.
Right.
I believe, and try to get these things done as well.
So you believe there's an administrative snafu somewhere?
There's somewhere an administrative staff that I don't even think the mayor is privy of, that there's a glitch in one police plaza somewhere that he needs to find out what's going on. Because he's the one that claims Vision Zero. I think it's upon his responsibility to find out what is going on in one police plaza so this issue can be stopped, so we can get our crossing guards that we need adequately for every school in the five boroughs.
Now, let's go back to what the issue is that we're trying to address. There, your concern is that there are not currently enough school crossing guards spread out across the city where they're needed.
Absolutely.
And
there's too many vacant spots, too many complaints about crossing guards not being there. And a lot of times you get complaints from parents themselves. They'll call in and say, listen, where's the crossing guards here? What's going on? You know? And that's not good. It's not a good thing at all to have parents to worry about their children's safety when they got to go to work to make ends meet.
Absolutely. And do you have any estimate of how many crossing guards we may need to appropriately?
Well, currently we have about 2,300 crossing guards. I would say we need at least 1,000 more crossing guards across the five boroughs. That's minimum. I'm talking minimum. You might need more than that. Because it happens to forget. You have crossing guards that take off. You have crossing guards that go on vacation. You have crossing guards that do that they earn their rights to do. So the problem is when they do that and take off, they don't have anybody to replace them to fill that corner back again. So that's the problem. So they need to hire a lot of crossing guards, not only to do what you call a replacement, but to have them there to make sure all our corners, every corner of the schools are safe, not just one corner, two corners. They have something called priority posting. That means they'll take somebody from one corner and bring a crossing guard from one corner and bring them to another corner. Now, that other corner now is empty. That's not the way it's supposed to work.
Right.
Every corner at all times
should be
fulfilled with crossing guards at all times. So that means you're lacking crossing guards. If you can't fulfill that corner and replace that person because you want to put that person in a different corner, that means you need crossing guards.
Let me move the conversation a little bit to this camera program, this city-run speed camera program.
Sure.
My recollection, the last I looked on this, folks were very upset that the Republicans in Albany had let this legislation pass that kept the speed cameras running.
Correct.
Is this the same issue with these are we talking about concern for these cameras near schools? Are we talking about the concern for the cameras across the city? Talk a little bit about what's going on right now.
New York City, because they refer to it as New York City speed cameras.
Right, okay.
And the thing about it was there was always talk about legislation would expire as far as the cameras being shut off. As you know, the state senate has refused to come to the table to vote for this doubling of their presence in the city, which is ridiculous. You know, say this is disrespectful, first of all. This shouldn't have been something that was bargained for. You know, these cameras, yes, don't get me wrong, they don't stop from what's happening, but they can record from what's happening so we can make it better in the future. You understand? So,
well,
but the issue that we're having now is that the Republicans in the state senate do not want to at all even come to the table to discuss it. We had to have Governor Cuomo put an executive order to assist us in order to get the cameras back on. Then Mayor de Blasio in New York City had put in an order as well to have the cameras back on. But the problem with that is he has to keep doing that every 30 days. It's not permanent. So every 30 days he has to go back again to turn his cameras back on, and then 30 days again, back on, because it turns back off, and then 30 days again, turn it back on. That's ridiculous.
Sean,
the cameras are there for safety purposes.
Do you have any sense that the Republicans want something in exchange for this? Is this some sort of Albany deal making that's going on, or they just don't care enough about downstate and the city, or what's your sense of what's going on here?
Well, you know, let me just be honest with you. My sense is, first of all, I don't think sometimes the Republican mindset gets the just of what is needed for certain people in certain zip codes. Okay, that's the nicest way to put it, brother.
Okay.
That's the nicest way to put it. And I really can't go further than the point in blanking it, that they need to be more coherent to what is the need, not an ask. Not an ask. It's a need that we have in the five boroughs of New York City. Safety is a must. Safety is a must. I tell people all the time, they understand that children are 25% of our population, but they are 100% of our future, and they need to be respected as such.
Let me ask you this. You've been, and we've only got a couple of minutes left, but I want to talk. You've been president of Local 372 for how long now?
2014.
And I've noticed, I was on social media the other day, and I noticed that you get engaged in conversations with folks. You're really thinking about how to communicate to your members and to, you know, all folks within DC 37. What do you think the importance is of a local president such as yourself being involved in ongoing communication?
Well, like you said, the word in a sentence in itself is the key, communication. It's all about communication. You can communicate in so many different ways. So long as you get the communication and you get the conversation across to the person and let them understand where you're at. See, the members got to understand that I'm here to point them in the right direction. But they're the union. Their bodies of union make up a union. Many of peoples. People, and the members got to understand that I come from rank and file, so I feel their pain. I feel they go through. So when they come to me with a complaint, I totally understand it from within. You know, I could feel exactly what they go through because I've been through it myself as well. So I'm not just somebody who turned a blind eye, like, okay, yeah, whatever, you're just complaining. No, there's a lot of complaints out there. So I make sure I engage. I'm in the field. I'm not just sitting in my office at my desk giving instructions. No, my boots are on the ground. I'm out there. I'm traveling across the five boroughs to make sure I communicate and see what they need and try to bring it back and do the best I can to make it happen.
Well, I just want to commend you because I just see that you're out there, and I see on social media, I look up and there's a conversation happening with members, and you jump right in and you try to clarify what some of those issues are. We're talking with New York City Board of Education Employees Local 372 President Sean D. Francois I. Sean, thanks very much for taking the time to talk with us this evening.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate you so much, as always. Appreciate you.
All right. Take care, my brother.
Thank you. Enjoy.
We'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
Welcome back. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. Joining us now by phone is Henry Garrido, the Executive Director of District Council 37. We haven't had a chance to talk. Welcome.
Yes, Chris. Good morning.
We haven't had a chance to talk since the ratification of the contract. So I wanted to take this opportunity to have you talk about both the fact that we got the contract agreement and the fact that it was ratified by an overwhelming majority of DC 37 members.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we through hard work, we said from the beginning that we would not wait months and months to get a collective bargaining agreement, and sometimes years. The last two rounds was, on average, we had to wait between 5 and 6 years for the members to get their contract. We set up from the beginning and said that we would not do that. And so working with the MLC partners, working with the other unions, we were able to reach a health agreement that allowed for some savings and productivities to be created in order to move forward and go with that collective bargaining agreement, which we're very happy about. There are some very good things about this contract, and there are very salient points that I think the members found to be very attractive and provides wages going back from day one. Retroactivity was part of it. And in addition to that, it provided free and continued health insurance through 2021 for the existing members, which, to our knowledge, makes us the only municipality in the country where the city workers have free health insurance.
A fact that may be lost on some city employees because they don't know, perhaps, what's going on in the rest of the country.
Exactly. Well, and even in the rest of the state. I mean, for the state employees that we represent right now, the premiums are, you know, anywhere between $6,800 and $7,000 a year for a family. And if you look at transit and look at other sisters and brothers in the MTA, they pay a substantial amount of 2% of their wages into benefit. And so we wanted to set up to make sure that we protected some of the very critical function. So this contract did that, right? Provided funding for health and security in order to improve our dental, improve our the financial health of the plan because of our prescription drugs going up so high. So this was a very important part, and this deal preserved that. I think in addition to that, one of the other very important parts of it is we provided for paid family leave, which has been sought after by our members for a very long time. And when we set up, we did this survey. This is one of the highest priorities in the members' books, is to be able to take some time off to take care of any family member without having to file, in many cases, bankruptcy or be strained financially. So this provides for us to join the state paid family leave plan with the city contributing into that. And you know, I think the members were very happy about that. And so, you know, we took care of a lot of other issues that were outstanding, and we created a salary equity panel, which to deal with professional titles. We created funding necessary to pay for education, which has been lagging for years. We had not had an increase in our education fund since the mid-1970s, and now we have not only created the fund, but equalized everyone so that not only did we quadruple the contribution, which actually helped us, but also it made it possible for people to have the programs and to tie them to career ladders with the panel. So overall, the members, I think, were very positively reacted to the contract, and that approved and came across in the ratification process where a record 98% of our members voted in favor of the collective bargaining agreement. 98%.
It's amazing.
That's as high as I've seen since I've been here in DC 37 for over 23 years.
And as you say, there were a couple of points. You mentioned the survey of members. We were able to, because of the digital world in which we now live, we were able to reach more members at the beginning of the process and ask them what their priorities were. And then you were able to reflect in your negotiations what those priorities were. So that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I think what we set out from the beginning is that oftentimes the leadership, you know, sometimes we are so involved in this stuff that we think we know what our members want and what they were respecting in a collective bargaining agreement. And from the beginning, I said, we're going to have to change this process to be membership-driven. If we are to live to our mantra that the members truly are first in this union, then why don't we start with them by asking them what they want to see in a collective bargaining agreement? And the majority of them said to us, we want you to prioritize health. We want you to prioritize wages are important, but we want you to prioritize all these other things that are really important to us, like the paid family leave and the education and instruction and the promotional opportunities where many members felt that they were being, you know, left behind as a result of nepotism. So they wanted a system that they can change how they can appeal when they're not receiving promotions. And we got very creative in doing that. But I have to say, it was all driven by what the membership wanted. And you can tell, I think, a little bit by how much of the members responded positively in favor of the contract.
Because
98% is not something that
It's a hard number to argue with.
But I think that we have been successful in doing both. And also, I think it was very critical in the wake of the Janus case that we would reach the contract positively, and that we want to make sure our contract members had a contract, but that we had language also to protect ourselves and protect our members when some of these right-wing groups are going after the rights at the workplace after the Janus case decision was rendered by the Supreme Court.
And I know you touched upon it, but I'd like to elaborate a little bit on the education part, because this is so important in terms of being able to fortify the education unit, which then makes it possible for our members to get up to speed in terms of what they need in the workplace. So talk about that a little bit, please.
Well, I think it was our education fund is pretty creative and innovative. In the 1970s, led by our predecessor and my mentor, Lillian Roberts, the union created an education fund that provided for tuition reimbursement and provided for training for CISC's workforce for their upward mobility to lead to promotion jobs, and also to do some in-service career training that would lead to and ensure that the members had whatever qualified technical skills they needed for the job. But unfortunately, that has been lagging. It has not actually increased. It was a ridiculous amount to assume and to begin from the beginning.
Per member, the amount that was funded per member was very low and stayed there for a very long period of time, right? Is that what
right. And it didn't cover 100% of the members. That's critical. It will only cover about 52% of the members because of the way that the language was done.
Oh.
And so it was important for us not only that we increased that amount, which we did by about 400%, but also that we made it uniformly that cover every single member at DC-37. We consider this part of an inequity that was taking place in the collective bargaining process, and we got that. We got the contributions. See, in the past, the money that we were spending was much more than the money that we were getting. As a result, that fund had to be subsidized through other means of the unions, and it was, lagging behind. So we are now launching a new DC-37 Education Training Professional Development Fund that I urge all the members who may be listening to be part of by joining and creating their own profile and their own badge system, and then also accessing whatever educational endeavors that they want to do, and to see how we can be helpful. And we are restructuring the program to now be more expanded to the idea of a career ladder and upward mobility and things of that nature. So we're very excited about what has been happening with the education, but this a contract providing the funding necessary to do is a crowning piece for what we needed to do in the first place in an effort to restructure the education and professional development for our workers and our members.
And listeners can access the DC-37 website, www.dc37.net, to find out more about the education programs that are available. And they can also members can also read about it in their public employee press. We've got a couple of minutes left. How do you feel post-Janus about the direction the union is taking?
Well, I feel pretty good. I mean, I think that, it's a little early, but I think that for the most part, the workers have understood the value of being in the union. So the number of people who have left the union since Janus has been dismal, and the number of people, on the other hand, that we have signed to be in the union has been outstanding. And so that, I mean, you want to keep that ratio as high as possible. The number of people that have left the union, we have signed more than 100 times that were the people leaving the union. Well, that's pretty significant. For every person leaving the union, they have 100 members who are now joining the union. That's pretty significant.
Yes, it is.
I think people understand the value of a union. Now, having said that, I think that we have a serious challenge because there were people who were previously were qualified as agency fee, that we lost a substantial amount of money for it financially, and we have to make up ground, a lot of ground, in order to make up for that difference. And I think part of that difference that we're going to make in the critical aspect of this will be, you know, how we approach our membership. So we need to restructure our union. We need to really look at our union from the perspective of the members, and more user-friendly and change. And just as we did in the contract, I think we need to do the same. We need to continue to listen to what we did in the Ask Me Strong and the DC 37 Strong campaign, listening to what the members want to do, what their input is, what they think their feedback is going to be, and then begin to restructure the union in a way that is more conducive and more user-friendly for them. And that goes twofold. That part of it is something we started pre-Janus. It has nothing to do with it. It's just about improving servicing in the union. But part of it has to have a reality that the members have to continue to see the value of the union. And sometimes all you have to do is show them, but sometimes it's also about providing them access to it. So I feel very positive after Janus that people finally, not only in DC 37, not only in New York State, but across the country, will begin to reevaluate and reassess the real value of being in the union as the positive force in not only the workplace, but also in society. And I think this decision of Janus will be backfiring of those right wings who wanted to really take away the workers' rights by the workers themselves standing up, rising up, and demanding to be protected. And one, that protection comes with a union card. And so, so far, we've weathered the storm. We have some financial problems that we're going to have to fix. But so far, I feel very positive about the results.
Henry Garrido is the executive director of District Council 37. Thanks for taking the time to be with us. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
Okay, thank you. That's the show for this evening. I want to thank our guests, Local 372 President Sean D. Francois I and DC 37 Executive Director Henry Garrido for joining us. Before we go, a couple of announcements. Thursday, September 13th, is primary election day. Volunteer to help us get out the vote in support of our endorsed candidates. To participate, call 212-815-1550. And to find out exactly who DC 37 is endorsing, you can take a look at your public employee press, which should be in your mailbox. Join us at the 49th Annual African American Heritage Day Parade, Sunday, September 16th at 1 p.m. Members will assemble at the east corner of 112th Street and Adam Clayton Powell Boulevard at 9 a.m. For more information, call 212-815-1113. And if you're having trouble with federal student debt, get help erasing it by attending a workshop Tuesday, September 18th at 6 p.m. at Union Headquarters. You can register at www.dc37.net/student-debt. And remember, if you've got any comments about today or any of our shows, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. We appreciate the feedback. Our engineer is Andrea Minocchio. Rudy Orozco is the producer. I'm Chris Policano. Until next time, ciao.